Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we will be taking questions. The number is 646-716-9663. I'm very pleased and excited to have Dr. PMH Atwater with me tonight. Welcome, PMH.
Oh, you know, it's just so fun to be with you again. And always my favorite topic. Near-death experiences and God.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about tonight?
We're going to talk about my latest book, Dying to Know You, Proof of God in the Near-Death Experience. Star, did you know that 90 to 95% of near-death experiencers come back knowing God? Now, I didn't say believing. I said knowing God.
I did not know that. I did not realize that the percentage was that high.
That children and adults globally, that high. Now, not all of them come back calling God, God. Some come back saying things like source or core or the one or the one mind. But it's still that sense of something really greater and more intelligent and more powerful and larger and bigger than we could even imagine, this idea of creator, a creator God. And it's just so absolutely now in their being afterward. Many of them, like myself, come to describe God as my next breath. God is my very breath. So this is a big, huge topic. And you know, here
How
we have the
book. How
long
have you been researching on your death experiences?
Since 1978.
Okay. Have you ever noticed that people who come back, they have a little different glow to them. They have different radiance of being. I don't know if I want to say they're smarter, but they definitely have some type of light. That only thing ever similar I've seen to that is people struck by lightning, which they may die so quick and come back so quick that there's no memory of it.
Yeah, the eyes are different. Often the language is different.
Yeah.
Sometimes the way they hold their body is different. Well, you know, there are physiological as well as psychological after effects. There's a whole pattern of them. Okay. And, you know, I go very deeply into that in other books like Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story. But this book, Dying to Know You, I'm so excited to talk about this book and to introduce people globally to this book, because it's not like any other book I've ever done. In fact, it's not like any other book you're ever going to read. It is a book that consists of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of voices. In other words, well over 5, 6, even 10,000 voices. It is the collective speaking as a collective about the collective experience. All I did was sum the voice of the many. So this is the book from the people, by the people, of the people, about their truth, what they learned, what they feel, what they know. And, you know, all the other books are either a memoir, or it's a personal experience, or it's research, or it's a religious tome of some kind, or a philosophical one. Not this book. And by the way, Dying to Know You is small.
Are we going to be able to buy that on Amazon?
You can get it anywhere. Any bookstore can order it if they don't have it. Yes, you can get it on Amazon. Yes, you can get it from me.
You know, what is your website?
www.pmhatwater.com. Oh, by the way, I have a free monthly newsletter. So if you get on my website, you know, get over to newsletter, sign up, subscribe. There is an archive, so you can read past issues. In the month of March, and it's we just passed over March. I put out two newsletters instead of one. I do that sometimes. Sometimes I carry an extra. So I did in March, but, you know, get on my website. There is a bookstore or just, you know, Amazon.com. Any place you want to go, get a hold of this book.
Now, you have more than one book. How many books have you written this lifetime?
you're getting cute, Star. Probably in the neighborhood of 15, although I haven't counted them. 11 of them are strictly, you know, focused on my near-death research. And,
well,
and you know,
I want to hear more about your near-death experience. I guess, you know, listening to other people talk, and that provides lots of insight. But what I really get the wisdom is being in the presence of someone who's had the experience, and they're talking to me. So tell us a little bit about your experience.
All I could do is a little bit, Star, because I had three of them in 3 months. So boom, boom, boom. Each was different.
Well, let's hear it.
So if I'm going to be talking about my near-death experiences, I'm going to be talking for hours.
Well,
so, you know,
all minutes. Let's keep it to 20 minutes.
I can sum them up. My first, well, how do I say this? I was raped.
Okay.
And it was, I became pregnant, and so it was a miscarriage. So the first one came about because of the miscarriage, the other two because of problems because of the miscarriage.
Okay.
And the first one was very short, very brief. It was primarily an out-of-body experience, although I could see things in the air that troubled me and bothered me. I didn't find out until my second one that what they were was thought forms. I came to realize, and I came to know, that whatever we think goes out and has a life of its own. It consists of an energy, a plasma. Usually most thoughts just evaporate or die out or, you know, go off to their own progression and, you know, just dissipate. But if you think a thought long enough and hard enough, then it becomes part of your life. So I learned a lot about thought forms in my second experience, even more so. I was visited in that experience by loved ones who died and gone on before me, including a grandfather. I had never known, never saw his picture, never had an opportunity to. And he came forward, introduced himself, and it was just it was incredible because I was seeing in him some of my own characteristics. And I would say, oh, that's where I got that from. I got that from this grandfather whom I never knew. I was also able to see Jesus. I was visited by Jesus, spent some time. It was not this idea of having to bow down and you know, holy, holy, but rather this was my elder brother. Someone whom I had not seen for a long, long time. So it was a very joyous time, sort of like a reunion, if you will, and a lot of laughter, and that was wonderful. I also had a past life review, And that for me was, I had one of the more horrific ones, that is to say the big ones, where you relive every thought, every word, every deed you had ever done since birth.
That that film that flashes in before, you know, right? That's so advertised about. You know, like your whole life flashes before your eyes.
Well, in this case, in my case, it was not the whole life flashing before my eyes. Not at all. It was a reliving, and it was in detail, and it was not quick. And plus the effect of my life on the air, the water, the plants, the animals, the soil. In other words, I got to see and live the full gestalt of my ever having existed on the earth plane, what that was all about, what that was all for, and what I did. And my third one, and also with that was a lot of forgiveness. With my third one, I really think that I reached the point of creation and consciousness, where it all is, where it begins, where it, you know, how do you find words for something like that when you're in this place that you really can't call a place, where you're witnessing creation as it occurs? And that was very involved. And a lot of things happened because of that. But when I was there, when I was in this place, when I was witnessing all of this, that's when I heard the voice speak. And this wasn't like an angel, a star, or a guide, or a guardian, or a disincarnate, or wasn't anything like that. It was a voice that was so big that, you know, we don't have a way of addressing that kind of voice because we don't have words for it. But I called it the voice like none other. My sense was that it was of God. And that voice spoke to me, and I can repeat what it said verbatim, very short and sweet. It said, and I quote, "Test revelation. You are to do the research. One book for each death." Then it showed me what was to be in each book. Book number one was not named. Books two and three were named. Book two, by the way, is to memory. It is out there. Anybody can grab it now. It'll never grow old because it's really not a book. It's a labyrinth. And I can talk about that later if you want, but it's a very unusual kind of book. And the third one I'm working on now, it's a specific type of manual. So, yes, I'm back now writing another book. And when I came, when I revived, I was filled with that sense of destiny, that job, that mission. You know, not all of us can remember our mission, even if we're told. I can remember. I was told I can remember. And when people say, "Why do you do all the research you do?" Well, folks, it's my job. It's what I was told to do. And I have worked relentlessly since 1978 doing my job.
And you have, you know, you've been all over to many conferences. You've been teaching. So what do you think is the most important thing you have to teach the public?
Oh, the most important, that's hard to say. For myself, what's in my heart is to be able to share what I've seen and what I've learned and what I've verified, because that is so important to me, to get out what can be verified to get out what is really true, rather than assuming or basing my work on questionnaires or basing my work on he said, she said, or being so inspired. Really, that's really not important to me. What's important to me is to be able to offer the public what is really there and what is really true based on verified research. And, you know, that may not impress anybody out there in our listening audience, but it's what fuels me, because I know that that what I'm able to see and find and verify and know, I can present it then to people in ways that can assist them and help them and guide them in their own life. So, you know, that's number one for me. And number two, you know, if you're going to ask me what's important to me, what I got out of it, what's the most important to me, I would say God. Absolutely God.
And that's big. And that's huge. I remember traveling somewhere along this vast seminar I've had for the last 50-some years, and I was sitting someplace, and you had spoken at this conference, and I'm not sure what state it was or what year it was, and somebody sat down next to me, and they said to me, "Star, I thought I was the only one. I was afraid to talk about my near-death experience. I was afraid to feel it till I heard PMH speak." And I imagined being alone with something and being it so great, so big, so beautiful that you couldn't get permission to talk to it. And how many people, by you being out there writing your books, by you being out there and speaking for so frequently in the public, have you given permission to feel, to integrate, to re-experience that experience?
And all of it, Star. Not just, you know, the near-death experience is not a light show with a storyline. It is a huge dynamic that causes us to redefine what it is to be a human being, what it is to breathe, to have life. And, that just is so important. You know, in the near-death experience, we have to face pre-birth issues. We have to face abortions. We have to face birth trauma. We have to face missing twins. We have to face what is garbage and what is beautiful in everybody's life, because that's what comes out of these experiences, and front and center. And then we have to take a good look at ourselves, because we are changed physically as well as psychologically, and we have to really take a look at our lives, our language, our thoughts. You know, it's an immense impact. The physiological after effects, for instance, it changes brain structure and function, changes the nervous system, the digestive system, skin sensitivity. You become much more sensitive to light and to sound and to electricity and to pharmaceuticals and all. You know, you can't hardly handle pharmaceuticals afterwards. So it's a huge kind of thing that really speaks to all aspects of life. And that, I guess I'm the only one, or certainly one of the only one in the field that is outspoken, that is blunt, that I get right to the point, and I say, wait a minute here, folks. You know, this is all love and light, except that between 71% to 77% of the experiencers, the adults, have a divorce within 10 years of their experience. So we're talking major change here, not little change. And if you read the book Dying to Know You, Proof of God and the Near-Death Experience, it's just, wow. You know, let me give you a little bit from the book.
Okay. I'd love to hear that.
A summation of you know, what thousands of near-death experiencers have said. So they're talking about God. They're talking about bathed in light on the other side of death. And that light is more powerful than 10,000 suns. You know, we're talking voltage here. We're talking wow. And they equate that light with God. And what I want to share is they're saying that light is the very essence, the heart and soul, the all-consuming consummation of ecstatic ecstasy. It is indeed a million suns of compressed love, dissolving everything unto itself, annihilating thought and cell, vaporizing humanness and history into the one great brilliance of all that is, all that ever was, and all that will ever be. You know the light is God. No one has to tell you. You can no longer believe in God afterward, for belief implies doubt. There is no more doubt, none. You now know God, and you know that you know, and you're never the same again, and you know who you are, a child of God, a cell in the greater body, an extension of the one force, an expression of the one mind. No more can you forget your identity, or deny, or ignore, or pretend it away. The light
Beautiful.
Does... Yeah.
Beautiful.
I mean, the book is full of that, and one of the reasons I'm so excited about spreading the word that this little bitty book is out there is because it's changing people's lives. You know, I was on one radio show, and the talk show host was just jumbling and falling all over herself on the phone, well, on the radio show. She said she'd never read a book like this before, and it had affected her so deeply that she could hardly talk. And I think the reason, you know, this book is so powerful is because it isn't me. It's the people talking for themselves in their own way about their own truth.
As if it was instructions to themselves, right?
They're just talking. And all I did was sum what they said. They talk about soul, they talk about God, they talk about heaven and hell. You name it, they're talking about it. They go for the big ones. And they just lay it all out there.
And I think this whole fear of dying, this whole fear of living, and when we have wisdom from people who have had the near-death experience, that it changes those essences in us. Am I afraid to die? Am I afraid to live? No, I want to live. I want to die. I realize it's a graduation. And when the grace of the integration of a near-death experience, and my friend had a near-death experience in 1971, she was to say, I don't know how many years later, and I'm having the grace of integration of this experience. And I thought of those three words together, the grace of integration of her experience, 1971, oh my God. She's been processing this for decades.
Yeah.
And she grows, and she doesn't seem to age, and she doesn't.
Yeah, that's part of the after effects.
Oh, not aging now. I wish losing weight was.
you begin to lose age. You don't look your age at all.
Well, that's something you and I have in common. that's really, we have that grace that came from somewhere in our spiritual experiences.
Well, that's one of the after effects of the near-death experience.
I teach something called future healing. And basically, if your mother or father had a bum knee when they were 60 or 70 or heart attack, you go into your own future and you heal your heart, your DNA, you heal your, you know, if you're looking like you're having arthritis. And I know that you've written a book called Future Memory. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, my dear. That is really my favorite book outside of Dying to Know You.
All right. So give us a few minutes to tell me what goes on in the book.
Future Memory is not a book.
Okay.
It is a labyrinth. It is a labyrinth. It is a real labyrinth, just like a sight labyrinth.
Okay.
I was shown how to convert this book into a labyrinth. Every sentence, every paragraph, every page is part of the math I used to create the labyrinth format. So therefore, once you start reading the book, you can't skip around, because you don't skip around when you're walking a labyrinth, do you? No,
absolutely,
you stay on the
not.
Path. And it's always going to turn on you. And the book does the same thing for the same reason. And the reason is to lift your consciousness up to the next highest frequency possible for you. The book is a brain changer. That's what it's for. It's actually a psychotronic device. It's alive. So, you know, I just love getting reports from people who read the book, even people who, you know, poo-poo it and say there's no such thing. And weeks afterward, they start noticing how different they are.
There's something that people don't get, and this something is called energetic content. And I have a couple of books that are loaded with energetic content. It's the words are there, it's important, et cetera, but the path or the energy that you take through the book is what you get. And I believe that the future in publishing is where we're going to see the downloads, the labyrinth. We're going to see that what is the energy that the author put into the books in between the lines is much more stronger than what the words say. And from listening to you talk, I get that the energy in the labyrinth of this book is energetic content that you get a raised vibration from reading this book, especially in the brain. And for me, I'm seeing new synapses firing for people.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely, absolutely, definitely. And it was the voice that showed me how to do it. I had written the book 7 times, and I always sent my books out for peer review because I, you know.
Right.
That's what I do, and and everybody came back and said, well, this is interesting material, but what is it you're saying? They couldn't figure it out. So I finally just gave up. You know, I did. I just gave up. And I said to God, you know, obviously I just wrote this book for me. It was an exercise for my enlightenment. And, you know, I was just going to throw it away. And I was upstairs taking a shower, and at the end of my shower, time and space ended. I froze in place, and the air filled up with sparkles. And this voice came through, and it said, and that's the second time and the only other time it's spoken to me since I died. And it said, turn it into a labyrinth. I will show you how. And so as soon as I got dried, I went downstairs and grabbed this this book that was busy getting nowhere. And in 2 weeks, I had it turned around, set it off to a publisher, and they picked it up in 1 week.
Great.
So it's been out there ever since.
Great. We're coming up on our commercial break here. I think.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
We are talking to PMH Atwater, www.PMHATWATER. Now, PMH has several books. She's really excited about Dying to Know You, Proof of God in a Near-Death Experience. And in the last few minutes, we've been talking about her book, Future Memory. PMH, have you led discussion groups or retreats for people who've had near-death experiences, or have you done any of that up close and personal work with people?
A little bit. Not a lot, because nobody has asked me to do it.
Well,
so,
this is what I see for your future, is that somebody's going to co-create with you a retreat for people who have near-death experiences, and in some way, shape, or form, you're going to hold the grace and the space for the group. You know, whether
I'd love to do that.
I'm not knowing who that is, but for all you people out there who've had this experience and are still in the grace of integrating it, as my friend would say, get a hold of PMH Atwater. Get a hold of her book. She's been doing this for decades. She's amazing, and a truly, truly amazing woman. Do you have universities and professors and people come to you to interview you and ask you questions?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes that does occur. Sometimes, not that often, because I'm not a PhD or an MD, and that does make a difference still in the professional world. So I do get those kinds of invitations once in a while, especially if I'm in Europe, because in Europe they're not as fussy about that as they are here. That is to say, they don't need all the credits. They want to look at your work and how verified your work is. And if your work is good, then they'll take you on. You don't have to have an MD or a PhD degree. But here in the United States, people are still a little fussy about that. But I do, I do get called in every once in a while. One thing I wanted to announce, please, I'm telling everybody, subscribe to my free monthly newsletter, because in May, which is next month, I'm going to make an announcement, and that is it's about a new research I'm going to be doing. Well, I shouldn't say new. It's sort of like a reprise of some of the work I've already done, like in the New Children and Near-Death Experiences. That book is devoted to children, and what I've done in the field with children. But I want to go back and revisit that, because I just keep finding so many experiencers who had their experience either pre-birth, during birth trauma, in their mother's vagina while they were being born, as a baby, as a toddler, or, you know, I'm going to cut it off at the age of five. So I'm going after the little ones, the little bitty ones, because they're markers. And what they go through and how it affects their brain and how it affects their nervous system, how it affects their lives is different than a near-death experiencer that is older. And I want to go back and go over that again, get some new people I have not talked to before, children if possible, older people, teenagers, doesn't matter. Anybody who wants to participate in that study, make sure that that you're subscribing to that newsletter. I'll give the specs, all the details, and come aboard.
Well, don't you think that some of the indigo children and the crystal children and the children born in the last two or three decades have a different perspective than the children born in the 50s and 60s? So when you read,
well, my
this,
dear, you're touching
to
on my book, Children of the Fifth World. Now, let's take all those labels, indigo, crystal, starseed, psychic, cosmic, rainbow. Let's take every one of those labels, toss them out the door. Then take the characteristics that those labels supposedly described. Take all those characteristics from all those labels, bunch them together, and you've got the new kids. And I go in depth about that in Children of the Fifth World. And I do mean in depth. And take a good look at what's happening. Yes, the pattern of the human race is changing. Yes, we're having evolution in our time. No, it's not quite what a lot of people are describing. What we're finding now is those labels are either somewhat exaggerated or they're causing more harm than good. So I get into the full story and how we're changing, in what way we're changing, and in the next several generations. So if you want to get in depth about that, then you want Children of the Fifth World. And really, I spare no sacred cows in that book.
I understand, and you know, they say that 62% of the children are ADHD. It's no longer a disease. It's normal. When I was young and you'd give me a puzzle of the United States, I'd put all 50 pieces in, and the teacher would smile and nod, and I'd be a good girl. When you look at the children today, they put in 42 pieces. They figure out where the last 8 pieces go in their head, and they walk away from the puzzle, and the teacher's yelling, "Come back here and finish it." They've already finished it. They've already finished it in their head. They're done with the project, yet the teachers don't recognize this. And
they
say
don't recognize them. Right.
It's a disorder. They can't pay full attention. I think that they're completing differently.
They're totally different. Totally different, and work on a different level. And again, I spell that all out in the book and in detail. The human race is undergoing an upgrade. We're becoming different. And I think it has a, you know, if you're going to get esoteric, if you're going to get into the older esoteric understandings, the mystical traditions that many of us know, and hopefully more of us will know, then you get into these understandings about root races, R-O-O-T, root races.
Correct.
And that's our basic DNA. That's our core DNA. And when you do that, then you come to realize that not only are we seeing the fifth root race here, but it's beginning to ascend or culminate or come into its fullness. And that's what we're seeing, is this fifth root race coming into its fullness, because that's where you have your higher intuition, your higher intelligence, the incredible ability to understand and communicate. That's where you have your genius. And these kids are all of that and more. And this idea of learning disorders, no, they're simply differently ordered.
They're teaching disorders, if you ask me.
They're differently ordered. And I talk about that at length in the book. Yeah.
And beautifully, you know, you look at some of these children and they're so wise and they talk to you. I was playing with one of my friend's children and I went, "Oh, Billy Willie, you're so silly. Are you having fun today?" He looked up at me, put his little fist, all 5 years or 6 years of him, put his little fist on his hip and said, "Star, I'm an old soul in a little body. Don't baby talk me." And I went, "Whoa!"
Now you got it. Now
you know,
you got it.
And you go, "Where did you learn that talk?" You know, and he's a, "Oh, it just came to me," you know. And when you hear the wisdom out of some of these children, you have to be amazed.
Inventing things. They're coming forward and taking stands politically. And they're not just being quote-unquote geniuses or great artists or great painters or wonderful with music, although, you know, we certainly have a lot of those. But they're coming forward with rocketry inventions, all kinds of inventions. We've got some of them coming forward now with political movements. 18, 19-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids, 16-year-old kids. That are coming forward in political movements that are leading hundreds of thousands of people.
And that wise innocence is so intense. You know, when we complained and we rioted and we loved in the 60s, we would never, ever become part of the government or become the leaders. And with the children now, it's very natural for them with whatever.
Yeah, they're stepping forward.
They're stepping forward and becoming part of the system to change the system instead of doing what we did in the 60s, was being against the system. So it's going to really work for him. I have one more book I want to discuss with you, and it's called The Big Book of One and Only Encyclopedia of Near-Death Experiences.
Yes, the Big Book is out there.
The Big Book.
And it is an encyclopedia. It really is. However, it's a fun one.
Atwater, pmhatwater.com. Did you have fun writing that book, or how many years did it take to compile all that information and what's in it?
Well, certainly the information came from my work.
Correct.
So the information goes back to 1978. How long? There was a two-step process in making the Big Book. It began, first of all, as the Complete Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences.
Oh.
And I wrote that with David Morgan. He helped me.
Okay.
It was an absolute nightmare to write it because the publisher, the Idiot's publisher, did not help us. They did not guide us. They did not do any editing. They didn't help us in any manner. We were out there in left field. All they did was give us deadlines and no help. And it was an awful, awful nightmare to do. It was published. I forget when the Idiot's Guide was actually published. And it didn't sell well at all because people at that time would not buy anything that said idiots on it, especially in a metaphysical bookstore or a spiritual bookstore. They all felt that the name idiots was an oxymoron or was an insult, and they weren't going to buy anything that said idiots on it. So I got my contract back, and the publisher didn't want anything more to do with the book. So David went his went his own way, and I was stuck with the book. And I didn't like it because it wasn't big enough, it wasn't full enough, it didn't have enough in it. So I rewrote it. I rewrote it all by myself, took a couple of years, and put the rest of the story in it, in the sense that I put a lot more in it than the Idiots book had. A lot more pictures, a lot more drawings, a lot more graphs, a lot more cartoons, a lot more sidebars. And I made it to be read by busy people on the go. So even though it really is a hefty big book, you can read it quickly and easily. You can just simply open it up, and there's a full story on the page, maybe several stories. So it goes quickly. People absolutely love that book.
And well, it looks like I'm going to be adding all these books to my collection, I really, really respect you. The last thing I want to ask you is, do you have a caller, Mark?
Yes, I do.
All right, we'll take the call.
Karen, you're on there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm feisty. How are you, sweetie?
I'm feisty, too. I'm so excited about these books.
Okay. Do you have a question for PMH?
Yeah, I had a near-death experience about 4 years ago. And I had the exact opposite. I'm now starting to understand that instead of everything seeming to get better, it's almost like everything I know is breaking apart and falling open. So, as far as nothing seems real anymore, none of my relationships seem real. Even close relationships, like my relationship with my son, a lot of things have, and he's 40, have seemed to have broken open, and we're now estranged, which is, it's just, I don't know what this is. I don't know.
That's the after effects, dear. That's the after effects. Please read my books, especially Near-Death Experiences, the rest of the story. You might also want to get a hold of Beyond the Light.
Okay.
The after effects are hard to deal with. First of all, let me tell you that it takes 7 to 10 years to integrate the experience. So you're a newbie. you're one of the new kids on the block because yours only was 3 years ago. So you're in the first phase of working with this and dealing with this. So you need to read about it. You need to know more about it and how it affects people. These experiences completely turn your life around. It turns your body around. It turns the way you relate, how you speak, how your language, how you think. It turns everything around. And if you don't have some help, if you don't have some way of understanding this or knowing about this, then these experiences can be difficult. Far from being lovely and light-filled, they can, in fact, be very difficult to handle. So, first of all, let me recommend that you get on the website of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. IANDS. So it's www.IANDS.org.
Okay.
that's the big major organization that will help you to learn more and gain a lot more knowledge. Certainly get on my website, www.pmhatwater.com. I'm the only one that's or one of the few, certainly, that has gone that deep into the after effects. You need to know about the after effects and how to handle them. And that's all over my website. That's all over the IN's website. If you possibly can, come to the next conference that will be held in September, the early part of September in San Antonio, Texas. I'll be there. I'll be talking about it. That will help you a lot. Certainly my books will help you a lot. Coming Back to Life, Beyond the Light. Those will be good ones for you. Near-death experiences, the rest of the story will be good for you to read. Certainly the big book of near-death experiences also will be helpful to you. And I have a blog, and a lot of these kinds of questions are answered in my blog. And you can learn more about my blog on my website. I have a lot of YouTubes. I work a lot with people like you who come back a little starry-eyed but a little confused, saying, what do I do with this? This was an incredible experience, but what do I do with it? It's mucking up my life.
And I want to say something. Imagine, just for grading's sake, that when you died, everything in your life was at a 10th grade vibrational level, and your job, your mate, and everything. When you wake up like a senior in college. So whatever used to suit you, whatever matched and mated to you, whatever friendships you have risen to a different level of it. Maybe not any smarter, maybe a lot wiser. So what is happening is people are not connecting to you, and you're not connecting people because of where your vibration is. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I feel... Oh, yeah, exactly. Nothing feels real anymore.
Yeah, that's that first 3 years. And then
yeah.
The next 4 years, people start to make sense again, and you land, so to speak, and relationships start to matter, and jobs start to matter, and things start to matter again, but in a different way. You find yourself translating what everybody else says so that you can understand it. And after about 7 to 10 years, you begin to really understand and feel better about it, and you then be able to integrate it into your daily life. But that first 3 years are the most confusing. It's almost... pardon this, but it's almost like being on a drug high. You're still on the other side. Your body's back, but it's like you're still over there. And so nothing makes sense over here. People don't make sense. Relationships don't make sense. Language doesn't make sense. Your own body doesn't make sense. And how you think doesn't make sense. Some of the best things you can learn is prayer and meditation. Those will help to ground you. Mindfulness, that will help to ground you. And then learn all you can about the after effects and how to handle them.
Okay. That's
okay,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I was listening to
you today.
You're welcome. God bless you both.
Thank you.
Big hugs, dear.
Do you have one
Welcome
more
to the
for
party.
Actually, I have a question.
Okay.
And the way I'm going to pose it to you is to say this. For a lot of us, that are on this spiritual journey or our spiritual experiences, we consider for a lot of us a very, very hard road that we've had a lot of different experiences that aren't very nice. And I guess as far as words of wisdom from yourself, can you tell me your different perspective on life before you died and then after you died?
Before I died, I was a workaholic. I did things because of my culture, because of my training, because of my religion, because of my thoughts, because of what I was told and what I believed. After my experience, I do things now. I live now, I breathe now in a totally different way because I now know that I'm a soul. I'm not just a name with a body and a social security number. I'm a soul. I am a child of God. I'm a co-creator with the Creator. And I move and live in a way that is respectful, that is filled with awe at even breath, even my lungs. And I know and affirm that everything I do is special in God's world. And everybody else is special in God's world because this is God's world. And I'm a soul, and I have the privilege of living life, even the yucky stuff, even the bad stuff, even the horrible stuff, is still part of that blessing. And every problem I have is a gift. And my job, as I see it, is to unwrap the gift and see what the message is. It just has turned my whole life upside down to where I come from a completely different angle than I did before. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Yes, it does. It's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
And remember, to purchase PMH Atwater books, CDs, DVDs, and other wonderful products at pmhatwater.com.
I'd like the book Dying to Know
PMH
You
from being here, and I will probably see you in Columbus, correct?
Well, who knows?
Yeah. And if not, we'll meet in some other place in time. Thank you for being with us, and good.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.